Adversaries are relentless, and they're only getting smarter, faster, and more sophisticated. Knowing their game is the only way to beat them. That's why we're here. Learn what it takes to protect against even the most sophisticated attacks. Welcome to the Adversary Universe podcast.
All right, welcome everyone to another episode of the Adversary Universe podcast. I'm your co-host, Christian Rodriguez, and I'm with Adam Myers, the head of our counter-adversary operations. So, Adam, how goes it?
Oh, do you not know our chief Reddit officer, Andrew Munchbath?
Here we go.
Sometimes we have to communicate to customers and the general public, and the man, the myth, the legend, Andrew Munchbath is the first one on the keyboard hitting up the Reddit. Ooh. Just trying to get those sweet, sweet Reddit points. And I think you can use them at like a Dave and Buster's or something.
Or Chuck E. Cheese.
And Chuck E. Cheese. He's saving up for like the big water gun that they got there.
What? Well, I'm really glad to have you on the show, Andrew. Welcome.
Thank you. Yes, I'm powered by caffeine anxiety and internet updates. So thanks for having me on.
How many upvotes did you get today?
Oh, you know what, Adam? We're not there yet. We're not that close. Got good friends. So personal question.
Look, I started off with a 2400 baud modem back in the day, and I don't understand this web 3.0 stuff. So the goal today is to really understand Reddit and how it works and what it does.
For our
and
listeners,
away we go.
Hopefully nice. Okay, so again, Andrew Munchbath, he's the vice president of our global systems and sales engineering group. So Munch, you are, can I call you Munch?
Of course.
Okay, awesome.
My wife calls me Munch, so okay. I think it's fair game.
I appreciate that. Wow, part of the family. You've been here for quite some time, and you and I have actually worked on the same team, and we have a great track record. You've been kind of this very iconic figure here at the company. I know that Adam was making some fun of the Reddit stuff, but obviously you've been spearheading that. We'll get to that later on. But you've also been a very go-to individual in the company when it comes to the concept of threat hunting, especially for newer engineers that we're hiring that may not necessarily be acclimated with kind of the fundamentals behind threat hunting. We have a lot of customers that you've engaged. We both have engaged over the years, but I know you've built some amazing threat hunting foundational queries and this methodology to how do you get better insight into all this data that you're collecting from not only CrowdStrike as an EDR vendor or any other EDR tool out there, but even your periphery devices and log sources and so forth. So this episode, I thought it would be great, especially in the wake of us merging our intelligence arm with our threat hunting arm, now called Counter Adversary Operations. I thought it would be great to maybe help our listeners get a good idea on what threat hunting truly means, and then how that's tied to intelligence. And I definitely want your feedback, Adam, also on how you see that on the back end with Overwatch and what your team is doing on the intel side. And then what that means from a customer adoption and adaptation perspective. And so that's a lot of words. And maybe, Munch, if you could share a bit of your background on the threat hunting side as well, just to get our listeners a little into the flow of threat hunting.
Sure. Yeah, no, I mean, as you said, I've been at CrowdStrike a while. It's 9+ years yet now. You and I started around the same time. I think we're a few months off, but you think of CrowdStrike as a company pretty early. We're around employees like 100.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a big company now. It's probably around 8,000 or so. I don't know the exact numbers, but we've been here a while. It's been an interesting journey. So I sort of started as a customer and then came over to the vendor side. After I saw the tech, I was like, oh man, I gotta be part of this. And one of the things that the product had been added to the product right when we got here was this sort of this back end where you could hunt through all the telemetry that Falcon was collecting, and it was in the cloud. And before, like, my experience with that sort of thing was the old school forensics, right? You'd have a system of in question or a collection of systems. You would physically go to that system or send someone to that system. You'd grab some sort of forensic image. That image would then go through some sort of post-processing. You'd have some sort of artifacts. You'd have to take that post-processing list or whatever you got and stuff it into something. And then you could do some analysis or some hunting over it. And this was just like, hey, here's an interface, go nuts. And that was sort of it for me, where I was like, wow, this is awesome. So that was the thing that really interested me about the product and brought me to CrowdStrike. So I kind of naturally dove right in and, sort of started, and it's evolved over the years into all sorts of weird things. When you're an early employee, if anyone's listening and you've ever been an early employee at any kind of company, it's sort of one of those things where once you touch it, you kind of own it. And even as we've grown, some of those things have sort of kept up here, like some of the threat hunting classes and tutorials I do, and obviously Reddit, which is kind of a weird one for someone that manages like 300 employees. But yeah, it's been a fun ride. And so that's sort of the genesis of it.
So I think I agree with you, right? I think, you know, threat hunting here, I remember doing threat hunting classes when we first started here, and they were like 4-hour courses, and we walked through the three kind of approaches to threat hunting, where you're applying this concept of, you know, atomic indicator hunting efforts. Then you're also doing hunting based upon this kind of like thesis, if you will, where you can say, if I'm an adversary and I have access to the System32 directory, for example, and all these binaries, how can I turn these binaries on their respective victims appropriately? And then the other one was more like outlier-based threat hunting, right? So how do I start baselining all this activity in my environment and identifying what is standing out in terms of activity? And that could be network connections, and that could be authentications, and that could be, you know, certain processes that are executing in a interesting sequential fashion. And then how do I start digging into that to identify if it's malicious or not? And, you know, there, that was a, I don't know if you remember those courses, but they were long, and but still really great feedback. And so I'm curious, you know,
what was the Hacking Exposed stuff that we used to do?
Yeah, we also used to do Hacking Exposed. You were part of that Munch, right?
No, we had to lead those seminars. That was thrown over the bow as one of the early folks, just like you did. So
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting when you talk about threat hunting as a concept, right? I mean, when you talk to customers and prospects and the subject comes up, it's very obvious the teams that sort of have a program and don't, right? Because there's this methodology around it. You know, sometimes you'll hear people say like, well, everyone on the team threat hunts. That's just kind of code to me for okay, so no one really does. Because you have to kind of go through it. You have to use a scientific method, and there's a process, right? You're taking in some sort of telemetry or log source or whatever. You're applying statistical analysis to it, and you're looking for outliers. So you have all this noise, and you're trying to create some signal. And that's sort of the essence of threat hunting. And we obviously have a team that does it. We can talk about this later about Aperture, which is sort of how you can supercharge some of your threat hunting, is if you understand the different apertures that, you know, different groups may or may not have. So it's a lot of fun. We used to really, really hammer home on it, because back in the day, 9 years ago, the concept, like we talked about, the traditional forensic, you know, concept wasn't scalable, right? If you had 100,000 systems, you know, and think about like, you know, something like Print Nightmare comes out, and it's like, you have to look at all 100,000 systems to see if this certain bit is flipped. The old way didn't scale, and the new way does. So we talked about that. We talked about that a lot, just to make sure that we were socializing it with, you know, customers, prospects, and the general cyber community.
Yeah, Adam, I'm curious on your feedback. Right, so Overwatch is clearly a threat hunting service, right? And I'd love to get an understanding on Munch, your perspective on what a good threat hunting program looks like as an enterprise that doesn't have a third-party service, and then how that kind of contrasts to, you know, why more people matters or why more data matters.
Yeah, it's almost a global perspective versus local perspective, yeah. Right? With Overwatch, they're looking at billions, trillions of events that are instrumented from sensors across the globe, every customer. And they've really refined kind of a lot of the methodology that Munch has talked about here. And, you know, just the other day, for example, we were able to find some exploitation of an FTP service, a pretty esoteric FTP service, in my opinion. You know, we don't see too much of it, but we were able to kind of quickly hone in on a campaign by looking for patterns and behaviors that we knew threat actors would follow. And then we were able to walk that back to the FTP service and then go back the other direction to find all impacted customers. So That's really the global kind of perspective from a threat hunting perspective. Then, you know, at the customer level, and this is where I think some of the things that Much does is instrumental on Reddit, as much as I give a hard time about being the chief Reddit officer, is that being able to kind of come up with, you know, in the old days, what were the queries? I think
Splunk query language.
Yeah, Splunk query language, and now we've moved to LogScale, which is our part of our Raptor framework. And so now, you know, being able to give the local hunting cue to that customer, you know, if there's a another FTP exploitation or something like MoveIt, which happened last summer, being able to very quickly ascertain using those hunting queries what you have in your environment and then going out and remediating and finding that is critical, because OverWatch can find the broader campaign and notify the customer that they have a problem. But then when something like MoveIt occurs or there's a vulnerability that's being actively exploited, the customer really wants to get hyper-focused on finding all of their exposures and closing those avenues down to the attacker. And that's where, you know, that localized threat hunting becomes very critical for them.
Hey, Munch, can we double down on that concept? You know, the localized threat hunting, right? Why it's so important? Like, what's good look like? Maybe some use cases also, Munch, that you can cover, because it's more than just saying, "Hey, I saw an alert from a tool. I'm now trying to do root cause analysis." Can you get a little deeper into that concept? Like, what does good look like when developing a threat hunting program? Because I think our listeners really want better perspective on what they could be doing better, or if what they have today is great, right?
Yeah, no, certainly. And Adam kind of hit it on the head. And when I referenced Aperture, he sort of, you know, stated basically what it is, right? So if you partner with CrowdStrike and you happen to have OverWatch, their aperture is very, very wide, right? Global aperture, hundreds of countries, hundreds of millions of workloads. They're hunting over that. And their advantage is they're going to see things that a single customer or even like an MSSP, they'll get more at-bats than that customer or that MSSP. So they have more muscle memory. They're looking for these broader campaigns or these esoteric campaigns. You know, if they find something like at a small manufacturer in Japan, the rest of the fleet, right, the crowd and CrowdStrike, benefits from that knowledge. When you get to this smaller or tighter aperture and you talk about local, the advantage a customer has is they're going to know things about their environment that any vendor, CrowdStrike or anyone, could never know. And you can sort of use that, you know, I think Adam's big into jiu-jitsu, right? Like, you can use that momentum as like a fulcrum to your advantage against an adversary, where you could do something insane that a vendor could never do. You could say, "Hey, this collection of servers, I'm hunting to see if any Python script is ever written there, because these servers, these workloads, they just don't execute Python." Like, you can't do that globally, right? A vendor can't do that across hundreds of millions of workloads. But based on the knowledge you have about your local environment, you can do simple things like that that make a big difference. And when you kind of combine them, right, when you have this, you know, this sort of entity that's 24/7 that has this wide global aperture, and then you have this local team that has this sort of knowledge that only they have, probably not even the adversary has, it really works as sort of a full force multiplier. So that's, you know, that's where really the magic comes in. And that's what good looks like when you get to that state. And we talk about OODA a lot in cybersecurity, and I kind of like it. So OODA is Observe, Orient, Decide, and Act. I think it was invented by the United States Air Force. Colonel John Boyd. I don't know his exact rank. I don't want to upgrade or downgrade.
He's a colonel. Yeah,
he's a colonel.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, you basically have this decision sort of matrix of, you need to observe what's happening, you need to orient yourself around what's happening, you need to make a decision, you need to act, you need to do that very quickly. Threat hunting programs do that, and when you get really, really good, if you identify someone else in your environment, if you identify an adversary, you can actually insert yourself into their OODA loop and disrupt them. And that's like the penultimate, that's like the holy grail of hunting and response right there.
Okay, so Munch, this is important because I'd like to take a deeper dive into a more generic approach to threat hunting, especially for those listeners that aren't current customers or are very new to cybersecurity or threat hunting in general, or they just started listening to the podcast and they're getting a little more acclimated with things like attribution and some of the reports that we publish. Can you tie a fundamental, you know, threat hunting scenario to adversary tradecraft and then how you start, you know, going down this rabbit hole of identifying something that could be bigger or attributed to a breach, for example.
Sure. Yeah. And it's interesting. The starting point for threat hunting is always, it's not always the same, right? Mm-hmm. So yeah. Sometimes you're given a new piece of information, right? And that sort of kicks it off, right? That's the end of the piece of thread you want to pull on. Sometimes it's just pure imagination, right? Teams, especially Overwatch, will come up with these hypotheses and they'll be like, you know, my hypothesis is process A should never do thing B, or process A followed by B should never do C, or user should never do, or would be uncommon if, right? It never is not probably the right word because you're applying some level of analysis to it. So, and we can kind of get to that first. So, I mean, there's some recent ones, you know, we can kind of talk about that are topical, right? If you think of sort of like XZ, right? Or, you know, Palo Alto had a CVE come out in their firewall, which is kind of being linked back to sort of an open source package, right? That's included in PanOS. So you think about what's the piece of information I have now? And we'll use XZ sort of as an example. The piece of information I have now, and I would love to hear Adam's take on XZ, because if you kind of look at the history of how that landed in that sort of the exploit landed in that piece of software, the weakness, vulnerability, whatever you want to call it, it reads sort of like a Jean Le Carré novel. It's awesome, but you have this new piece of information, right? XZ, a certain version number, has this weakness, vulnerability, CVE, whatever you want to call it. And now, so the information is this version of XZ needs to be identified, remediated, or mitigated. That will be like a kickoff for a team, right? Where you would say, and it bleeds a little bit, you know, threat hunting can kind of bleed into some of these sort of more op scenarios, right? We can talk about more like exploitation stuff, but this one's pretty topical. So what were we sort of instructing or teaching or prompting customers to do? We're saying like, hey, if it's in your environment, these are the common directories. These are the common software packages. These are the common command line arguments that would be run, file structures, file names. And this is how you extract that version number so you can quickly hunt across your fleet and say, okay, this particular software package is on these particular workloads. And then that's step one. And step two is then, you know, you have to go out and remediate. And typically the team that might hunt and the team that might remediate are not the same. In smaller shops, they might be. But that's sort of how it would kick off, right? It's like, I have this new piece of information. I have this new, you know, it's not usually an IOC. It can be, but, you know, hunting for IOCs is pretty straightforward because they're atomic, right? It's either there or it's not. But you have to look, if you get an IOC, the thing I'm always interested in is what's the intent of that particular atomic indicator, right? Because atomic indicators are cheap to change, right? If you have a hash, like a SHA-256, you can echo one bit into a file and you can break that linkage. But if I know like, okay, if this particular binary lands on disk, the behaviors it's going to exhibit are A, B, and C. If you can look for A, B, and C with some level of fidelity, then it doesn't matter what the particular binary's name is, hashes, whatever. You're looking, it's almost like Inception. You need the most basic form of the idea when you're hunting. And that usually yields the best results.
I think that's the way where most people start with threat hunting is with some atomic indicator that they can go search for. And, you know, that's always kind of a question I try to ask when I'm talking to somebody to ascertain what their where they are on the threat hunting journey is, you know, if I gave you a known bad, could you find it, right? An IP, a domain, a hash, whatever it might be. And if the answer is, you know, yes, or I think so, then start kind of exploring how they do that. But I think about this as a maturity curve, and at the very bottom of that maturity curve is no threat hunting. And then kind of the next iteration up is, can they take a atomic indicator or something like that? And then as you keep moving up, now it's like, okay, XZ is a good example where that's something that it was a little bit harder to find because it was buried inside of as a library, you know, other things, and was it built from source and things like that. And so as you start to move up, it goes all the way up to being able to take intelligence and indications and warnings about some of the things that we're looking at, right? If we look at, you know, the potential for Iran cyber threat actors to do X, Y, or Z because of some geopolitical event, being able to now take that information and say, okay, well, we know how they operate. Where would our exposures be, and how can we increase our threat hunting cadence? Can we increase our aperture, our visibility into a particular thing because we know that this may be coming? And that's really, you know, moving from a reactive side of the maturity curve to a proactive side.
I love that. You know, I'm very interested on, you know, I know we can't mention too many different vendors, but I think a lot of this also lends itself to some supply chain risks and threats, right? I mean, mm-hmm. You have any good use cases about that?
Well, I mean, Sunburst is a good example where that was a backdoor that was very difficult to detect because it was a particular component of a broader software suite. It was part of a signed binary. And, you know, hunting for that became, once you had the atomic indicator, was that's actually a really interesting use case, right? Yeah. Because before the atomic indicator, you were looking for a series of behaviors that were anomalous. It was some strange domain callouts. It was some, you know, interesting registry activity, perhaps. But then at once it became known what was going on, it was very trivial to go search for a hash, right? So that kind of, I think, really illustrates the difference between the levels of threat hunting that you might be doing.
Yeah, that's good. Munch, you know, so I know we've had a few tongue-in-cheek comments around Reddit as kind of an opener, but you do actually manage CrowdStrike's Reddit account, or at least you're managing a subset of it. And explain maybe to our listeners that are not familiar with what you're working on, like why is this so important, especially under this theme of threat hunting?
Yeah, so it sort of came to life as an accident probably 6 or 7 years ago. When one of our executives actually was like, someone on the internet's wrong, right? There was someone on Reddit.
That never happens, really?
No,
who that was now.
Yeah, I was like, you don't say. And they were like, well, you got to get in there. And I was like, what do you mean get in there? And they're like, well, go correct them. And I'm thinking to myself, I don't know if this person's ever been on the internet before, but that never works out well. So in I go, I make my Reddit account, Andrew-CS, and you know, I start having a conversation, and you know, you never let any good crisis go unleveraged. I just figured, well, I now have blanket permission to use Reddit on behalf of CrowdStrike. So another engineer we work with, Brad, actually went, and there's some sort of process if someone has like a community registered, but it's abandoned. Someone had registered our CrowdStrike. It was like one person that was just posting questions into a void. Hadn't posted in a couple of years. So Brad filed the petition to actually have it taken over, and it was surprisingly easy. It happened like, I think, within an hour or a day or something. And that was probably about 7 years ago. And then, so we're on reddit.com/r/CrowdStrike. They call them subs, so that's our subreddit. And right now, we started, it was sort of just kind of Brad and I waiting for people to engage or, you know, reposting kind of blog posts that we're already on CrowdStrike.com, and now it's a community of 20,000 members.
Oh, wow.
Posting questions, and and everyone kind of helps each other, which is really nice. The community is almost fully self-policing. You know, the users upvote and down. Someone's getting a little spicy, right? The other community members come in and issue light corrections. It's a really nice place. You know, it's a nice little corner of the internet, which is cool. The thing that actually really started it, and probably why I'm here, it's probably about, I think it's 3 or 4 years ago now, I needed to find a way to up-level my team on threat hunting. Mm-hmm. And I wanted the content to be easily searchable and available to customers. And we didn't have a great way. Like, we didn't have a private forum that we could use to, you know, to post this stuff on CrowdStrike proper. So I just started this thing, and I called it Cool Query Friday, which is had I known it was going to last this long, I probably would have thought a little bit harder about the name.
But, I love the name. Yeah, I think it's
good. Yeah. It's kind of evergreen now. Like you can't change it because people know what it is. And they just call it CQF now, which one user on the subreddit came up with it, which is just kind of nice. So for Friday, for a long time, every Friday, I would just post this little sort of hypothesis-based threat hunting thing. Like, hey, let's say you want to profile user logins or command line arguments coming out of PowerShell. It's just how you would go through that. And they're pretty dense explanations. Like at first I was just writing these tomes. They were like 1400 or 1500 words. They were just massive. And now since they're sort of almost built into a series, there's I think there's about 75 of them. They're a little bit shorter, but you know, the context is still there. It's the hypothesis. Like, what are we doing? Why are we doing it? Where would you find this in the Falcon data set? And the concepts are cool because they're applicable elsewhere. I mean, I learned threat hunting and query languages. I learned best by like seeing little snippets of code or examples and saying like, oh, well, I don't need to do that, but I can use this little bit over here for this other thing I want to do. And I just wanted to see if I could put that in a place where, you know, our coworkers and our customers could get at it. And for whatever reason, it just ended up being Reddit. And, you know, 7 years later, here we are.
And where do you, that's a lot to do that every week, right? So two things that, I wanted to address there. One is, where do you come up with the idea for a cool query?
So it was, some of it is just things that you would probably want to know. Like profiling user logins or failed user logins is just always low-hanging fruit, especially when you have, you know, some cloud systems or systems that are, for whatever reason, have to be exposed to like the bleeding edge of the internet. That always yields interesting results. You can even find things like, you know, scripts with hardwired creds that are misbehaving. Some of the stuff is low-hanging. Your team obviously influences that sometimes. That, you know, I have a pretty close relationship with a few of the folks on Overwatch, and they'll say, hey, if you could explain to customers how to look for this, we're seeing an uptick in it. So we don't call that out specifically because we don't want to tip our hand, but some of it is related to that. Obviously, some of it's topical. We've started a tag on there called emerging, right? So like the XZ, how to hunt for that was, we try to keep that out of, you know, the tutorial stuff and put that in a place where, you know, the print nightmares and the other things are like, hey, this is an active CVE or an active campaign. And this is how you hunt for it. So there's a sort of a separate section for that. And some of it's just, for a while we started going through the MITRE ATT&CK framework, right? We just start with like discovery and just like, okay, local user enumeration, right? See if I can remember. It's like T1087.001, right? That's local. And then I think .002 might be domain, right? Like that's a tactic and technique. It doesn't mean that bad stuff is happening, but you can hunt and you can perform statistical analysis on it, because I could say, you know who probably isn't doing a lot of user enumeration in user space? The people that work in my accounting department, right? Like, sure, system admins might, if I can segregate those systems or users out, fantastic. Sure, developers might. They're usually not the majority of a workforce. And if you can, again, we talk about aperture. If you can take your aperture and you can shrink it down even further within your organization, there's all sorts of stuff. There's all sorts of possibilities that open up when it comes to hunting.
No, I love this. I know that, to your point, I know there's been some major events from everything from Eternal Blue to, you know, Print Nightmare. And every time there was an article published, everyone would send me a note saying, hey, you know, do you know if Munch has anything on Cool Query Friday or if he's going to publish something? And I'm like, well, what about me?
Well,
I can help
do
you.
Cool queries.
I know, but they're lukewarm queries, but that subreddit didn't take off, so I apologize.
Can we address that Munch actually used a MITRE ATT&CK ID on a podcast? That's got to be a first.
That is a first, actually. Congratulations.
Nice.
Everyone here, but maybe in all podcasting.
In all, maybe. Really?
Maybe.
Yeah.
The other thing I was going to point out, too, about the Reddit communication mechanism is that it allows really tactical communication from CrowdStrike to the technical cadre of our customer set.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and that I think is the thing that's really important. Munch said, would you say 20,000 users?
Yeah, that's a great subscription.
Yeah, there's 20,000 people subscribed, which just means if you were to go to just reddit.com, not directly to our subreddit, on your homepage, you see anything that's posted to our CrowdStrike, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, but that lets us really get those tactical queries out. And I can tell you, like, as we're talking about blog posts and we're talking about, you know, how are we going to communicate with customers about something? Munch is always just kind of popping up in a channel, and he's like, "I just posted it on Reddit."
It's an interesting mechanism. It's certainly, I think we're probably sort of alone in the space where we communicate with the broader cybersphere and our customers over Reddit. It's very informal, it's informal and interactive, which is why I like it, right? When you put something on a company's proper website, CrowdStrike or whoever, there's a certain level of, I don't know what the proper word is, like finality or certainly legal ramifications to that. On Reddit, it's more like, hey, customers love homework, which is a thing I found out, which is often really weird. Like when XZ happens or any of these other things, customers want to be proactive. But customers don't have a ton of time, right? They're managing a titanic amount of tools, and they have day jobs, and they have all these other things they have to do. So anything we can do there to kind of just get them aimed in the right direction, I think is helpful because it saves them time. So if you can get some of that time back, and you can make the customers or whoever's looking at it, whoever's reading it, customer or otherwise, move a little bit faster, then that's a win in our mind, that's a win for us.
Well, this is fantastic. So I think, you know, I know we're running up on time here, but, you know, Munch, any feedback or just some parting words for our listeners on, you know, threat hunting and some of their efforts, you know, advice, maybe?
Sure. You know, yeah. I mean, everyone's interested in threat hunting. It takes some time and discipline. The way you start is start with a hypothesis, document everything, right? Like Jira, ServiceNow, a Google Sheet if you must. But it's really important to start with some sort of process so that process can be iterated on. Threat hunting can sort of bleed into detections engineering, right? So once you do the statistical analysis and you figure out, I kind of lump some of these hunts into different like outcomes. One of the outcomes is, you know what, this happens regularly or enough where I can't make this, you know, sort of, I can't turn this telemetry into signal, but I still want to look at it, right? And when you talk about Overwatch, they comb through just a titanic, monstrous amount of noise to get through that, to get to that signal. But they do it in this very organized fashion where it allows them to be efficient. And then the other end of it is you come up with this hypothesis and you're like, wow, like this doesn't look like it should ever happen in my environment. Can I automate this so I don't have to, like, you know, hunt and then curate? I can just turn this into sort of like what we would call a detection, right? Like an instant piece of feedback. That's sort of how people work through this process. And it has to start with, like, write down what you want to do, write down what you're doing, and then iterate on it, because you're going to make mistakes. We all do. I do. Adam does. You do. Well, maybe not Adam. And then you can just improve that process. And the sort of, you'll know you've done it right. You will know you have done it right when one of these sort of esoteric kind of like things comes out, like, hey, this is bad. And you can go into your threat hunting harness and you can say to your boss or your manager or whatever, you know what? 6 months ago, we made this sort of threat hunting rule. We put this threat hunting rule in place. Had this new thing happened between 6 months ago and now, that rule would have triggered and we would have known about it. So I can tell you with confidence that based on this new piece of information, it hasn't happened in, you know, X number of months. Like, and that's just nirvana.
Adam, from your perspective, any parting words for our listeners?
No, I think the takeaway from this Adversary Universe podcast is that if you want to learn how to threat hunt a little bit more with the CrowdStrike platform, join our Reddit, because Andrew and Brad and others are there trying to provide guidance and directly interact with our customers. And it's kind of a low stress environment to be able to kind of get access to somebody that I have tremendous respect for here at CrowdStrike. And you know, you two are probably my favorites in the broader org because we have a good time. So
absolutely,
join the Reddit, interact with Munch, and we'll see you. We'll see you there, and upvote him because he thrives on that.
Feed on upvotes. And before we part, I'll probably get flamed for waiting this long to mention it. We do actually now, recently have an internal community. So there's, you know, there are obviously some folks that aren't really excited about posting questions on the bloody edge of the internet. There is a CrowdStrike community that's internal, guarded by your Falcon login at community.crowdstrike.com. You can always use that as well. We're over there, and a lot of the tutorials get cross posted. So,
Nice.
Yeah. Awesome. So if you're not a fan of the Reddit, you can always use our internal community.
Oh, that's amazing. Well, you've heard it here first. Thanks for listening to the Adversary Universe podcast. We were covering threat hunting with Andrew Munchback. So basically, if you're playing hide and seek at home, and instead of finding your little brother behind the curtain, you see an adversary stealing your digital cookies, go to Reddit to figure out how to stop that moving forward.
Wow, I have so many questions. You're going to end just
on
that. What?
Thanks so much for listening to this episode. If you like what you're hearing, subscribe to our podcast and head over to crowdstrike.com/adversaries to learn more about the many bad guys we track. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time on the Adversary Universe podcast.
This is the Adversary Universe podcast.